Greetings and good morning, Western Colorado. Thanks so much for listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. It's 8 o'clock, and here's your local newscast for Monday, February 11th. The Colorado Bureau of Land Management has announced that it will defer the sale of 8 controversial oil and gas leases near Mesa Verde National Park from its upcoming February 14th lease sale. State Director Helen Hankins has also announced that the BLM will defer 3 leases and portions of 2 others near Dinosaur National Monument from its May 2013 sale. These decisions came just days after the Colorado BLM office deferred all oil and gas leases in the North Fork Valley. The National Park Service has contended that the lease plans for parcels near Mesa Verde didn't conform to Interior Secretary Ken Salazar's reforms due to the lack of an air quality assessment for the park. Last week, more than 20 former park employees from the Four Corners area and surrounding region wrote Salazar to urge that the parcels be withdrawn from the sale. The Park Service also has raised concerns about possible air quality and other impacts of drilling near Dinosaur National Monument. Critics of the Colorado BLM office say lease protests in the state are higher than they would be if the office was properly following reforms intended to address concerns earlier in the lease planning process. A new poll tracking the conservation attitudes of residents of the 6 Rocky Mountain states shows strong support for greater protection of public lands and investment in renewable energy. In early January, 2 polling companies questioned 2,400 registered voters across Arizona, Colorado, Montana, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming for Colorado College's State of the Rockies project. Wind and solar ranked first in most states when voters were asked about what 2 energy sources they wanted to see more money spent on. A majority of respondents in all the states said that while some public lands should be drilled, environmentally sensitive places should be off limits forever. 3 in 5 said that drilling should not be allowed in critical locations near recreation areas, water sources, or wildlife. Only 35% said that more public lands should be opened to responsible energy development. The poll was also conducted in Spanish to reflect that demographic in the West. 64% of Latino respondents described themselves as pro-conservationist, about the same result for the Rocky Mountain states as a whole. State Democrats recently unveiled their much-anticipated package of bills aimed at curbing gun violence. As part of our Capitol Conversation series, Benta Berkland takes a look at the chances of the bill's passing and the internal debate among state Democrats.
I'm here with Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald and Tim Hoover with the Denver Post. Looking ahead, we've got the Democratic gun package proposals. Some of them are pretty controversial. We have 8 different measures. Not all of them have been introduced yet. Any ideas if they're a surprise either of you? Tim?
Yeah, the bill that Senator John Morris has introduced, Senate President John Morris, that assigns liability to gun makers, gun sellers, and gun owners for any act that occurs with a gun. That was pretty surprising, especially in light of the fact that there's a federal law that basically precludes this. And Morse knows that and says, you know, well, there's some hope that maybe this will be repealed. And, you know, there's also this argument out there that maybe it's federal overreach. But I think most people see this as more of a symbolic measure than anything else. And the other thing that's really telling about that proposal is kind of what it didn't do, what it stopped short of doing, is something that the legislature could do, which is ban assault weapons. They could just flat out ban them. They could ban semi-automatic rifles. But it just shows you that even after all of this galvanizing of gun control sentiment, it's something that still the Democrats are stopping short of doing.
I think Tim makes a really good point because listeners are hearing so much about the gun debate from the president and what's going to be happening at Congress. The difference here is Democrats control both legislative chambers and the governor's office, so it really is up to them how far they want to go. Republicans do oppose a lot of these measures, but it really doesn't matter. Joe, we also have a proposal to limit high-capacity magazine clips. We've got background checks. Do you see this also as just an internal fight among Democrats?
Well, in a way, You said Republicans oppose most of these. I think they oppose almost all of them, except for the bills that deal with helping people with mental problems. So the Democrats took over the House last year. They held on to the Senate. When you win elections by pretty big margins like that, you pick up all the competitive districts. And the people who win tend to be always looking over their shoulder. Either they're politically moderate or they have to act like they're politically moderate in order to get elected just 2 years down the road, which really isn't all that long now. And these people will be really hard votes to get for something like the assault weapon invitation to lawsuits. It's not a ban. Tim's right. They could have done that. The thing everybody does seem to be coalescing around is background checks for everybody. Even if you want to sell a gun to your next-door neighbor, got to go through a background check through a licensed dealer.
I think the high-capacity magazine bill especially is going to be an interesting one, because that's one where I think they possibly could get enough Democrats to support it, but it's going to be a real test. But the liability one, I'm not sure that they will get enough support for it or that it won't be modified greatly. And the governor hasn't tipped his hand to any. He's indicated some willingness to maybe limit high-capacity magazines.
And, Benta, what you said earlier about is this just an internal debate among the Democrats, in a way it is, because I just don't see that there's any sort of a compromise with Republicans on a lot of these bills. It just comes down to a culture clash. The two sides of the gun debate are even more polarized than the Democratic and Republican parties. The people running these bills think that a room full of guns is a dangerous place. And the people opposed to these bills, they believe passionately in the right of self-defense. They distrust the police to arrive and protect us.
One of the things that was really interesting is the fact that the NRA president visited Denver and visited with a lot of the media and visited the governor and lawmakers. What you're seeing is these national special interests come to Colorado because they know that Colorado is becoming the test case for gun control nationally. Everyone's watching carefully to see what happens in Colorado. If in a Western gun-friendly state like Colorado, we can limit high-capacity clips, maybe even do some other things, have the universal background checks, etc., maybe Congress goes even a couple of steps further.
Thanks. That was Tim Hoover with the Denver Post and Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
The local Conservation Center held an annual meeting yesterday and chose a new name, the Western Slope Conservation Center. The nonprofit was created by the marriage of two conservation organizations, the North Fork River Improvement Association, known as NFRIA, and the Western Slope Environmental Resource Council, known as WISERC. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more from Sarah Sauter, director of the Conservation Center.
Sarah Sauter is in her third year as the director of the Conservation Center. With degrees in environmental science and environmental biology, Sauter also has experience in facilitating collaborative projects. Before joining the Conservation Center, she consulted with community groups, including NFRIA, to develop watershed plans. It's been a challenging and productive year for the Conservation Center's small staff, who work with a board of nine. On the eve of the annual meeting, Sauter paused to reflect on the center's accomplishments. Many were undertaken in partnership with other organizations and governments, and all were fueled by volunteer labor. There were river restoration projects. In Paonia, where the Conservation Center teamed with the Minnesota Canal and Reservoir Company, and outside of Hotchkiss on the Curry Conservation Easement. There were recycling projects at Cherry Days, with Pickup America, and with Delta County at the recycling station in Hotchkiss. There was the Wild and Scenic Film Fest and the annual river trip.
And we were able to take the first trip down the Gunnison River through the redesigned Heartland Diversion. And that when they redesigned that diversion, it created safe boat passage down and safe fish passage up. And that dam has been in place for, decades. So that's a pretty phenomenal thing to happen. Now you can officially put your boat in at Paonia Reservoir and float all the way down to Grand Junction for the first time.
There was work with a local mine.
We're proud to see that the Oxbow Mine has partnered with Aspen Ski Company and Holy Cross to open their coal mine methane capture facility. That's something that WZERC has been advocating for a long time, is to figure out a way for the coal mines to be able to capture the methane that they're required to vent. So it's a great thing to have such an innovative, really great project in our valley locally.
And there was the lease sale battle with the BLM, which resulted in the deferral of all 30,000 acres of parcels in the North Fork Valley.
I think the most powerful thing that I learned is how amazing this community is and how inspiring it is to see a community, a group of people get together speaking with such a powerful, unified voice that they can actually convince the government to change and to listen. And that doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it gives me goosebumps. We have a stakeholder group that's been meeting for about 6 months now in partnership with Citizens for Healthy Community and lots of folks in town. And we're working on our North Fork Alternative, which is a set of management recommendations that we hope the BLM will consider in adopting for the final resource management plan. In the horizon, many of the existing leases in the area are going to expire within the next year or two. So that's something we need to keep an eye on. The other thing is there's a lot of private land in Delta County. And do we have the right rules and regulations and infrastructure in place if people do try to start developing on the private lands? We can't be caught on our heels on that issue. So I think there's a number of ways that we can keep moving forward and try to stay as proactive as possible with energy development in the North Fork. Mm-hmm.
The Conservation Center just received a grant from the Union Pacific Railroad Foundation to continue its improvements at the Paonia River Park.
We hope to do a lot of xeriscaping, maybe some demonstration plots for irrigation or gardening, get the weeds under control, do a lot of native plantings, just turn it into a beautiful community park. In early May, we'll be doing 2 conservation days, where local 4th through 6th graders will come out and go to a series of different stations and learn about water and wildlife and do some creative journaling and observing nature and that sort of thing. So we're really excited to really start integrating the community and the schools into the river park.
It's a lot for one organization and one executive director to take on, but Sarah Sauter is in her element.
6 years ago, if you'd asked me what I wanted to do, it would be leading an environmental group in a small rural town in the West. I couldn't be luckier.
For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
And that concludes your local newscast for Monday. For KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, I'm Eric Gould. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.